Hello and welcome to Mac Expo 2005 and to the Macworld Conference 2005 from Olympia in London. This is a special edition of TechCasts featuring Sam Downey and...
John Walters. I've kindly been invited by Sam Downey to join him as a guest on his show.
So coming up in this edition of TechCasts, we have interviews with...
Andy Notko.
And a whole lot more from Mac Expo 2005 and...
Macworld Conference UK 2005.
Welcome back to TechCast. We're now speaking with Andy Inarco, who's done a wonderful presentation at Macworld Conference UK at Mac Expo 2005. Welcome, Andy.
Hey, how you doing? I'm sorry, I'm a little bit talked out, so I don't have anything clever to say by the way of hello. Hey, how's it going? It's the best you get.
So, John, what do you think of Andy's presentation today?
I think it had an interesting span of topics because it started off with the stuff that even beginners and newbies on the Mac would understand, but it really started to get into the nitty-gritty as well, like... Activity Viewer, that's a good start to really dig into the operating system, I think. And opening a terminal window in a crowd of these people, that's brave.
Yeah, because I was hoping to underscore that there are a lot, in terms of fixing problems, it's all about prevention. It's all about a calm and rational use of very good and easy-to-use utilities. There are some things you can do on the same order that if you leap out of a plane and your ripcord on the parachute doesn't work, there's some things you can do, but you don't want to be in that position to begin with. All I know is that the first time that I learned a way to unstick a frozen Macintosh so that I could at least save my changes, I was at least happy to know about it, although I was capable to preface it by saying this is very dangerous, don't really try to do it unless you really know what you're doing.
Sure.
And unfortunately, I'd have to compress it a little bit because we're running a little late on time.
Yeah. I don't really mean to be rude, Andy, but could you share with us just why you had to contact DriveSavers? I mean, that story was just too great to not be shared.
You know that I'm famous for having this commitment to my readers. And the thing is, DriveSavers has been around for a long time, but because I take good care of my equipment, and I also maintain them myself, I've never had a chance to really have a trashed hard drive to send them. So basically, I was forced to basically drop my PowerBook with the drive spinning just to give me a basis for which to call DriveSavers. I simulated this in the way of basically falling asleep on the sofa with the PowerBook on my lap. It seemed to work okay after I picked it up off the floor, but then 2 weeks later, it stopped working. And of course, I had a backup to go by, but at least I had, again, literally, because I had the backup and I didn't really lose any data, my first reaction was, oh boy, I can finally send this to DriveSavers and see how well they work. And they were able to get everything back, even though like one of the platters was pretty well gouged up.
Andy, you've got a current book out at the moment. Tell us what it is.
It's the Mac OS X Tiger book. It's arrogant to say that, yes, this is the Mac OS Tiger book, but apparently that's what we sent to the Copyright Office, and that's what they said, so who are we to doubt the U.S. Copyright Office? It's really, really cool. I think that any author who tells you that they have the only Mac OS X book that's any good is pretty much trying to sell you a bill of goods, if not a bucket load of books. Mine is designed so that it has a very conversational tone. It gives you all the information I think that you're looking for. A lot of the information you're not interested in but should know about all the same. But even the stuff that you don't want to know about is told in such an interesting, hopefully, and entertaining manner that you're going to read it just to experience the book.
You found an interesting additional channel besides writing books in your columns and also besides your yellow text blog, and that's your Flickr stream. You mentioned several times that you really like Flickr service. What is so special about this photo sharing service that is different from all the others from your point of view?
It doesn't waste my time, and it's not lame, and it's not stupid. And one, two, or three of those are true of every single other photo hosting site that I've ever seen. Either it locks you into a stupid 1988-style gallery format that's not relevant, or it limits you to just putting like one line of caption text for every picture. That's something I hate about iPhoto and iMac, excuse me, and .Mac. I don't know why. I've got this really incredible, fascinating photograph. I'm going to say, I was at Yosemite Park in... Oh, wait, I don't have enough space to say 1988. I have to say, I was at Yos Park 1/1/04, whereas Flickr will allow you to basically blog the photo if you'd like to. It's actually a perfect fusion of a photo site and a personal blog, because not only can you put all the text you want, but also anybody can leave comments on it. It's very, very easy to set up galleries. You can basically do photojournalism through it, tell stories just through photos. As a matter of fact, I really prefer its organizational tools to the tools that iPhoto gives you. I actually use it as my online version of my iPhoto library.
This is your third visit to Macworld Conference in the UK. How have you found it this time?
Wonderful. It really is. I mean, I was very disappointed when they announced that Macworld Boston, the summer show, was canceled. because I really think this is the perfect kind of show to set up. It's certainly not a large show. It's about as large as your average hockey rink would be. But there are lots of vendors, lots of people showing lots of good things. Adobe is here, Quark is here, Apple is here, and they all came to play. The aisles are full, but not so full that you feel as though you're swapping sweat with people as you walk by. There's a lot of energy. And one floor above here on the balcony, there are two or three big conference rooms where you can sit for an hour and a half and 2 hours. And okay, maybe this is the point where it falls down, where you're listening to me talk for 2 hours on drive maintenance and disaster recovery. But there's lots of good information to be had. You get a lot of value for the money that you bring here. So I really wish there'd be more shows like this back in the U.S. That's one of the reasons why I wear this hat. I have something protecting me from the audience in case they get sick of hearing it and they want to throw things. I usually put into my contract rider that all chairs must be bolted to the floor.
You just mentioned the demise of Macworld Boston, and we talked to David Polk about the same topic yesterday. There's some other shows that have unfortunately gone south, like the Macworld 10 conference. What do you think should be added to shows like this to make them even more compelling for new visitors to actually come around and visit?
One of the first and most important things is to choose the right sort of venue. Last year at the Boston show, they basically took the biggest convention center in the Northeast and put one of the smallest, and put a 10,000 person show into it. And so it's not that there were that many people to begin with, but when you put them inside, you know, Rhode Island, they kind of tend to spread out and kind of dilute the energy of the place. Basically, you need to create an environment where people are going to come and not know what they came to find until they actually encounter it. And one of them is doing whatever you have to do to get Adobe here, doing whatever you have to do to get FileMaker here. Because, again, they will bring so much energy to the production, and you can't survive without that kind of energy. And pay me a lot of money to come and speak. That's also a key component of it.
And also carry on buying your books and also reading your columns in the Chicago Sun-Times.
Chicago Sun-Times, home of the world champion Chicago White Sox. I was chanting Go Sox all year. I should have specified Boston Red Sox, but I'm still happy with the White Sox winning the World Series.
Any other articles you write at the moment for any other magazines?
Well, I'm the back page columnist for Macworld UK. I occasionally contribute to Macworld US editions. I occasionally contribute stuff to Playboy. I do TV stuff locally in the Northeast. Basically, I'll show up and blather on anybody who's foolish enough to pay me.
I was a bit surprised to see that you wrote a book on Xcode. Now, we all know that you're a diehard AppleScript fan. I mean, you wrote your own blogging tool. Do you use any other development technologies? Do you do any Cocoa stuff, any Objective-C? Because, as I said, you wrote that Xcode book fully blown.
Well, first, credit where credit's due. I do a lot of stuff in Xcode. I write my own software. My own weblog, my website is managed with software I've written myself in Xcode. However, I'm not the sort of ninja Jedi-style user. So basically, other people, I worked on the outline, and I added stuff where relevant. I added a forward as well. In terms of my own programming stuff, I really haven't strayed that far away from AppleScript Studio and basic Cocoa development because it tickles my need to be developing software. I used to use Real Basic a lot, and I still think that Real Basic is a really wonderful development environment, especially if you need to write one set of code, then cook off copies for Windows and other environments. I haven't used it quite so much because it's just as powerful as it is. I'm not the sort of guy who needs power. I need fun. And that's what Xcode is giving me. I just think it's wonderful that I'm writing a brand new revision to my website management tool that builds in its own custom text editor, that builds in its own graphic editor, all that other sort of stuff. And until I've actually got everything working, I've got little routines working that I'm actually using BBEdit still as my text editor. But using Xcode, I can simply say, well, please take the standard BBEdit window and graft my new user interface elements onto it. So the exact same drop-down dialogue sheet that blogs stuff and adds comments to it is now temporarily attached to BBEdit. And the exact same thing, just by dragging one file in Xcode, will then be attached to my new project. That's the sort of thing that makes you just want to, you know, oh, baby. I can't believe it. At one point I was learning 6502 assembly language. What a fool I was, you know, learning opcodes, when at some point in the time stream this was going to be available.
Speaking of fun, you had a hilarious photo story on Flickr about your diner decathlon in New England with one of the more famous programmers that joined you on that trip. What about an Apple Store pentathlon where you have to ask the geniuses at the Genius Bar a question they cannot answer and write a 1,000-word blog entry on Scratch and upload it from the Apple Store wireless LAN, something like that? That would be cool.
I really have a lot of respect for the Genius Bar people because it's so wonderful to... I will say with a trace of ego that usually when I have problems with my own machines, I can either fix it myself or I know that it's a terminal case. But I always take it to the Apple Store anyway because there's always a very good chance that they'll find something I missed or that They will explain something to me that I didn't really understand the way that they understand it, because, again, they do this every single day. There's no, I mean, if your PowerBook gets hit by a meteorite, they have a special tool there, because last week some other guy brought in an iBook that got hit by a meteorite, and this tool, they figure, will be able to get the chunk of hermaphrodite, the material inside all terrestrial and non-terrestrial bodies, and took out your hard drive. I mean, they're just dynamos.
On that note, Andy, we'll leave it there. Thank you for speaking to us. Hope you had a great Macworld conference experience again. And we shall welcome you back again for next year's Macworld Conference UK and also to the Mac Expo 2006.
As long as I keep looking left when I cross the street instead of right, I'll be here.
Thanks for talking to TechCast. Thanks, Andy.
It's been great.
My name's Deke McClelland, and I'm here actually presenting Photoshop and the Creative Suite for Macworld, for the Macworld conference, for the Design Pro track. And what I do in general is I've been in the design industry for about 20 years. I started off as a service bureau guy and working as an art director. And over time, I've written a series of books. I've done a lot of videos for a group called Total Training as well. So now I have a group of books in this series called One-on-One with O'Reilly is the publisher. And they're a series of graphic arts books, books on Photoshop, InDesign, and Photoshop Elements right now that are full-color books. They're tutorial books. And then, so they're step-by-step. They're pretty challenging, though. They're not just just one step after another. We tell you why you're doing things. And actually, I think they're a lot of fun. And all sample files included, and there's a series of videos that are included along with those books from Total Training. And then I do some standalone videos for Total Training as well. They tend to be fairly intensive. My shortest video series on Photoshop with Total Training is 8 hours, and then the longest one is about 21 hours. So they're pretty intensive DVD-based series.
You're in a very creative business. How do you see a difference in actually working with graphics and Photoshop and writing a book? How does that work?
Well, I mean, certainly it is an extremely creative business. That's why I've taken to it. I'm sort of, you notice, especially at this conference, there's, I think there's two tracks, obviously, to this conference, and I think they branch out in different different groups as well. You have the guys that are the Macintosh guys that are interested, like Andy Nako is interested in the scripting and some of the more techy stuff, and David Pogue, who's more of a generalist, who's talking about the fun stuff you can do with the Mac. And that tends to be a group of people who are interested in coding and are interested in the computer for the computer's sake. And certainly I'm into that to a certain degree, but I probably wouldn't be, if it weren't for graphics, I wouldn't be in computers, period. So my inclination is strictly in sort of this graphics domain with Photoshop, with the image editors, with the graphic arts programs like Illustrator, and then with the layout programs like InDesign. And they really do coalesce in terms of the books, in terms of book creation, which has become obviously more and more part of what I do for a living. Because every single bit of a book is something that I'm involved with creating. So I create my own graphics. I'm obviously creating all the text. I'm writing the books. But I'm also creating all the graphics. I'm deciding how the graphics are going to look on the page because I'm laying out the books. So I do have a team of people that works with me, but everything tends to go through me. And even most of the graphics I create myself. So this is an area in which I derive a great deal of satisfaction, is not only writing and talking about how these programs work, but actually doing it myself and actually touring you through it as well.
So, Deke, could you tell us more about your current book?
Well, my most recent book is one that's coming out as I speak, that's going on and driving me crazy right now because we're trying to get it to press like today. But and that's a book called Photoshop Elements 4 One-on-One. And it's about the most recent release of Photoshop Elements, which it turns out, even though I'm here at this Macworld conference, turns out that's a PC-only product. That's a Windows-only product. But it's brilliant. It's a reduced version of Photoshop. Photoshop's like, I don't know what it is in English pounds, but in dollars, in American dollars, it's about $600. And so it's a pretty expensive program, Photoshop CS2 is, whereas Photoshop Elements is $99, so it's about a seventh of the price. And it includes half the features of Photoshop, and so it's this gargantuan, extremely capable program. So that's what we're just getting at right now, is this book that talks not only about some of the basic stuff, but it talks about the very high-end stuff too. So we walk you through how to do some very, very ambitious things inside of Photoshop Elements. And then the book that's the newest here at this conference is Adobe Photoshop CS2 One-on-One. And again, that's the high-end one-on-one book. That's this, it's about a 500-page tutorial guide to Photoshop. It's I would term it as extremely ambitious. One of my sort of problems with the tutorial books that are out there, that were out there before I started on this one, are that they tend to be fairly they're for basic users or for people who are just coming to the software, which is fine. But also I don't really find them to be challenging if you know a thing or two about the program. And I'm also often wondering why I'm doing a step. And that's what I was trying to eliminate in this. So where I'm always telling you about why to do something, and I'm always trying to make sure that you're really accomplishing something inside this book. So by the time you're actually done with a project, you've created something that you're really excited about. Like this was one project that you actually take this woman who's got blonde hair and she's got hair all over the place, and you put her against a different background, but she also happens to be holding a match that has a flame on it, and you take that flame and take it with her and put it against a completely different background, and then the flame's not enough, so we set the flame on fire a little more, and it's photorealistic. It's not some little trick. It's not some weird little command that we're using to make some little wacky sort of flame effect. We actually are taking that flame and we're superimposing it against a different background. You come up with a photorealistic composition.
So as a Mac user, how long have you been using the Macintosh for?
I've been using the Mac since 84, since it originally came out. I come from a graphic arts background, and that's what I really did. I was just 1984 is the year I graduated from college, and during that time I took a couple of computer courses. My family is big into computers. My father was an electrochemist, so he was really into them. And I never was. And I took a couple of computer courses, hated them, and ended up looking at the Mac the first time in 84. My mom brought one home from school. She was a school teacher. She brought one home, and I took a look at it, and I just sat there and screwed around it. And I happened to do a comic strip for the newspaper, Daily Comic Strip. And I decided to integrate some of these little sort of McPaint things that I did into a comic strip. And I actually cut and paste them after printing them from an image writer. And I was so stoked about it, and the newspaper was so impressed by it, that they decided to hire me to be their computer guy that was going to bring computers into their workflow at the newspaper. Of course, I didn't know the vaguest idea what I was doing, but naturally I didn't say no. I said, sure, I'll do that. And I had to figure it out on the fly. So that's basically that sort of day with the Macintosh is what really sort of shaped a lot of what I do for a living now.
Well, the vast majority of Adobe applications are available on both of the major platforms, on Windows and on the Mac. Do you, as a creative person, see a difference in how you use the computers based on the operating system, or are you so immersed in the environment that the software application provides that you don't really notice the differences in the platform that the software runs on?
Well, I'd like to think it's the latter. What I keep trying to do, and since I started with the Mac's been sort of what I've liked the best, but over time I found that starting in the early 90s it became obvious that more and more of the people that I'm speaking to and that I'm trying to communicate with are Windows people, so I really made, I like sort of, there was a year that I just immersed myself in the PC and decided it was about the clone time. It was sort of the mid-90s, sort of the dark times for the Mac, and I decided to just immerse myself in the PC. I was really pleasantly surprised how much it didn't matter what platform you're on. But having sort of made that jump and gotten into sort of like treating really the Creative Suite, the Adobe Creative Suite, as my primary platform effectively, and going back and forth between the platforms, what I found is there are definitely benefits to each. There are times where I would be preferring to work on the PC, but I have to admit, and this is something that, you know, despite how hard I try, and I don't know if this is a matter of preference or a matter of habit, but the computer that I continue to use on the most regular basis, I mean, I've got a PowerBook strapped to my back right now, and then the computer I use at home is a G5 dual processor machine. And so that tends to be where I spend the majority of my time is on. And I've got an Apple 30-inch, you know, cinema display, and it just that Apple tends to be still, as much as I'm frustrated with Apple sometimes, they tend to be the more dynamic, you know, computer vendor out there. And so I end up gravitating toward them. And the operating system is beautiful, and Windows is ugly. I mean, that's another problem.
So, Dick, where can people find out more information about you? Is there a website? Is there an email address?
My website is www.deke.com, and that's D-E-K-E. D as in dog, E-K-E.com. And that has a lot of information. The other places you might want to look, just in case you're curious, are TotalTraining.com. Total Training is a group that sells the videos that I work on. The other group is, I believe it's media.oreilly.com is the other group that's out there.
Okay, Jake, thanks very much for talking to us. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Have a great day.
All right, you too.
Well, that's it for another year. That was Mac Expo 2005 and the Macworld Conference UK 2005. So, John, you've seen some high-definition TVs here. Can you tell me more about those?
As a matter of fact, Sony was presenting one of their HD cameras. I mean, Steve Jobs has announced 2005 to be the year of HD. We haven't seen that much of HD so far, except for the support for HD media and some of the Apple software tools. I've seen HD on some TV screens before, but this was the first time I actually saw a live preview done from that camera that Sony was showing, and the image is just so crisp, it almost hurts your eyes. I mean, this is such a huge step away from what we're familiar with today as regards TV. That's just amazing. One thing you have to keep in mind, of course, is if you're working with HD, you have amazing amounts of data to crunch through. So you should make sure that you have a capable Mac for that. But the end result, what you can see on the screen, is really beautiful. Really worth it. Really beautiful.
John, how do you think it all went? And what's next?
Interesting conference, interesting show floor, and next one is the big one in San Francisco. January 2006. Be there.
We would like to thank Simon Jerry from MacWorld UK and the MacWorld UK and IDG team for inviting us down. Thank you for that.
And of course, we thank Andy Notko, Deke McClelland, and David Polk for their time and their patience with us. And thanks to you, Sam, for having me on the show. It was really exciting. It was my first podcast. I enjoyed it.
So, yeah, thanks, John. Do you have a website, by the way?
I do, though I do have to admit that it's still a vast building site. But, well, I hope to get some stuff up there soon. So if you dare take a look, go to www.polytropia.com. That's polytropia.com.
Thank you, John, for speaking to us and being part of the TechCast podcast here at Macworld Conference UK 2005. You have been listening to the TechCast coming from the Macworld UK Conference 2005 at the Mac Expo 2005 at Olympia in London. You've been listening to TechCast. My name's been Sam Downey. Thank you for listening. For more information on the Macworld UK Conference, go to macworld.co.uk/conference. This podcast was produced and presented by Sam Downey and John Walters. This podcast was downloaded from www.dsound.co.uk.